It's time for Off the Curve with Justin Spiro.
Welcome back to Off the Curve, Justin Spiro. The Mel Tucker saga is continuing on and on. I think we are in the, unfortunately, early stages of what might be a long, drawn-out process. Obviously, a big step forward today in that regard with the firing of Mel Tucker, finally formalized, done, official, now the official ex-head coach of Michigan State. This whole thing started at sometime between 12:30 and 1 in the morning, local time here in Michigan, on a Saturday night or Sunday morning, however you want to call it. And it was with this bombshell report initially from Dan Murphy at ESPN that there was some type of investigation going on here. That's what kind of got the ball rolling. And then the USA Today bombshell comes right on the heels of that. We're going to bring in the reporter behind that, Kenny Jacoby from USA Today, the one who really broke this story and the extent of it and the nature of what's going on there with Mel Tucker and East Lansing. Kenny, this has got to be a crazy past month or so for you. Am I right?
It sure has been. Yeah, I've done more of these interviews than I probably ever have before in the last couple of weeks.
Well, good. So you'll be well-versed in the topic, and I'm sure you're used to deflecting as you need to, because there are a lot of unanswered questions that you hold the answer to that you might not be able to get into. Some you will. I'm fascinated by the origin of this. So I've watched some of your other interviews and seen some of your statements on it. You seem to indicate that Brenda Tracy had contacted you, not vice versa. But I don't know, did you have some knowledge of what was going on? When did you first become aware of this story that there was something going on with Mel Tucker and East Lansing?
Yeah, I've known Brenda Tracy for 6 years or so. I met her actually when I was a student newspaper reporter at the University of Oregon, and I was covering a sexual assault case there, and I got in touch with her. We've stayed in touch since. I write stories that are right in her line of work, and so we were familiar with each other. She first told me about what was going on with Mel Tucker in May, and at that point, it was partly to see had I heard anything about Mel Tucker. But about a month or a month and a half later is when she actually said, I'm worried that basically this story is going to leak out, and I want to have a story ready to go just in case it does, so we could sort of combat any disinformation or incomplete information that might come out as a result of that. And so I started working on a story around that time. We basically, I worked on it and we held on to it for a few months until the rumors started to really start getting out of control and things started to sort of blow up. And that's when we dropped the story.
So it seems like the timeline that I'm aware of is the ESPN report drops, which had virtually no information. It was less than 1% of what your report had, but yours came within, it was under an hour after. Was that not the spark more so than it was a revelation that her name had been leaked somewhere? Because her name did not appear in the ESPN report, but it seems like that was more the trigger than anything else. So that'd be pretty coincidental if you were right piggybacking the ESPN story, right?
Yeah, there were two things happening at the same time. One was that we were hearing all kinds of rumors from other reporters in the USA Today network, and Brenda had been hearing rumors, from the school's Title IX office that other media outlets were poking around, reaching out for comment, filing public records requests. And so while all that was happening, I actually had to, reach out to ESPN, Paula Levine, for comment for our story, because Paula, played a part in that story. Mel Tucker sort of invoked her name and she became part of that case file. I reached out to her, got her statement, and just a few hours later, ESPN put out that story. So it sort of, moved up our timeline for publication a little bit, but we were already getting to the point where we were close to ready to publish.
I'm sure at this point you're well-versed in the skeptical side of this in terms of Brenda Tracy's account and, why not just hang up the phone? Some of these things don't really sit right with a lot of people. I have no idea what happened. I'm honestly just kind of waiting for more facts to come out still where we're at. I mean, you obviously arrived at some level of conclusion where you think this individual is credible, I'm guessing, to have gone this far with the story. You have a background with her. Like, how does she come off to you? Do you believe her story as it's been told?
Well, you know, this question of is Brenda Tracy credible? This is, I'll just start by saying this is not, you know, something that you and I have to, you know, issue a determination on, right? This is why we have a hearing process that's going to happen in just next week, in a little over a week. And so it's that process that is designed for, you know, people to be able to ask these sorts of questions, all the questions that people have been asking publicly. This is the place to air it out and to get all those questions answered. And there will be a thorough report afterward, you know, that I assume will assess kind of all of these questions of, you know, is this thing credible that she said? And is that thing, and is what Mel said credible? But yeah, you know, to publish this story, of course, we had to, you know, vet it and make sure that it would stand up to scrutiny. And, you know, to that end, I think, you know, there are a few things I can say. You know, Brenda, when she agreed to give me a copy of the case file, it was a 1200 page case file. You know, she didn't hide anything from me. She didn't keep anything from me. You know, sort of like the investigator, she said, you know, go ahead, review all the evidence, you know, present it however you want, tell the full story. She, you know, even the parts that looked unfavorable to her. And so that's what I did. And I think I did a fairly decent job laying out, you know, both sides of the story and presenting it fairly and not trying to put, you know, my thumb on the scale. And, you know, the other thing I guess I'll note is when these sorts of credibility questions come up in Title IX cases, you know, this is often the very thing on which these cases are decided, right? There's often no eyewitnesses or, you know, recordings of the incident. That's just the nature of these types of cases. And so it does come down in many cases to, does this person have a greater propensity for lying than this other person? And we've already seen in this case that Mel Tucker has made numerous statements that have been proven false and where he has changed his story. And I have to say, you know, that Brenda's story, even if there are parts that people question, has stayed consistent throughout.
Yeah, to me, like where I'm landing as far as the Tucker side is, I think you've demonstrated in your reporting that there are, whether you call it lies or inconsistencies or misstatements or whatever, there are problems with his account. I don't think that's really in dispute. I think that's a fact at this point, and really more than one of them. I don't think it's anything that can be explained away. He had every reason to tell the investigator that he was in Michigan and not Florida. I mean, he had all the state he was in. I don't think that was an issue with memory. So I'm with you on that component. I'm with you on Mel Tucker's credibility being at best questionable in this process. I think the question that a lot of people have is, and I don't know if you've discussed this angle with Brenda or if she has any self-awareness of what people are going to say and have ended up saying, is even if you take that one phone call out of it, the phone call in question taking place in Florida, the famous masturbatory phone call, take that out of it, there's still multiple extensive phone conversations, some of which came, I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, after. Does she have awareness of how that might look and how that might be perceived? Is that something she addressed in any way?
Sure. You know, I guess to first just correct what you said, there was only one phone call after, you know, the incident itself. And that was the last time they ever spoke, where Brenda said that Mel Tucker insinuated that he would destroy her career for speaking out. So that was the last, you know, and only phone call they had after that. But yeah, you know, I mean, this is, it's the crux of Mel Tucker's defense is, look at how many times we talked on the phone before this. You know, clearly this is evidence of, you know, that we had a romantic relationship. Brenda will tell you, no, they had a platonic friendship, essentially. You know, Brenda, just to back up a little bit, you know, she has been going around the country for 9 years, speaking to various college, high school, and NFL teams, more than 100 of them, telling her story, you know, more than 100 times. You know, she has this nonprofit that she started that focuses on men specifically, engaging men to try and become part of the solution to combat sexual violence. And so I will just say, you know, she works with a lot of men, right? You know, she has lots of conversations with lots of men and has over 9 years. This is kind of the core of who she is. She says sometimes in her speeches, you know, if women could solve sexual violence, we'd have already done it. The men have to step in. And so that's what she sort of built her whole career on, is, you know, engaging men and trying to get them to be part of the solution. She says that she thought she had found a champion in Mel Tucker, somebody who was genuinely interested in her, you know, had heard her story and seemed to understand it, you know, who had given her business and shown, you know, expressed this interest in her and the work she does and in improving the culture on you know, Michigan State's campus. And so, you know, she says that they developed essentially a friendship over that time. And so, yeah, they did have these conversations. She said that in those conversations, that Mel Tucker, you know, on several occasions, you know, indicated to her that he was romantically interested in her. Like when he, you know, called her shirtless one time, when one time he asked her kind of directly, like, if I wasn't married and I wasn't a coach, would you date me? And she said, you know, she was basically trying to keep an arm's length with him while maintaining this, you know, professional relationship that she had ongoing with MSU. And so, you know, she says basically when it got to this point on April 28th, 2022, she already had kind of a weird feeling about Tucker because she thought she had made clear to him that she wasn't interested in, but he seemed to continue to sort of pursue her. And that's when this phone call happened, and that took her by surprise. And so, you know, I think once this hearing report comes out, everybody will sort of get to see how she's answered all these questions that people have. And, you know, in fairness, like, this was a 1200 page report. We couldn't write up every detail. We had to make it a story that people would read. So there is more to it. And I think people will eventually get the opportunity to examine, you know, all these questions that have been asked of her.
Yeah, Mel Tucker alleges, you know, I'm paraphrasing a little bit, but that there was a photo sent to him by Brenda Tracy in some type of provocative pose and asking him to comment on her in the pose. Does she deny that ever took place? She ever sent him any type of provocative photo?
She does, yeah. The photo is included in the hearing report, in the investigation report, which is what I've seen. And it's a photo that somebody took of them, like in the MSU football administration building. They were walking side by side. You know, this wasn't like a racy photo or anything like that. This was something taken in public in an MSU football building where she was sort of turned to the side. It's sort of like a profile angle. And Mel Tucker said that was the provocative photo. So people will get to see that eventually.
That's good. I think the transparency thing will go a long way because there are so many questions here. What is her motive? Because I had Deborah Gordon, who's arguably, you know, one of the best five labor attorneys in the country, on my show and talked to her. And she said, you know, Title IX is not a collectible situation. There's no, you know, financial liability or damages to be gleaned from that. Obviously, my estimation and from the attorneys I've talked to, a civil suit against Mel Tucker isn't necessarily going to prevail. There's not a lot of great evidence in that regard. The only potentially illegal conduct here, there's no evidence of in terms of this, you know, masturbation on the call. Like, so there, it doesn't seem like a cash grab. What do you think? Is this just she believes in the cause? I mean, there's a lot of cynicism around her, but she denied a settlement, right? I mean, she declined an offer from a settlement. Is that accurate?
That is accurate. Yeah, we've reported that Mel Tucker and his attorney twice approached her about settling before Mel Tucker ever sat down for his interview. So while they were trying to get the case basically dropped, that was one of the outreach efforts they made. So, you know, everything that Brenda has told me and has told the investigator is that she was motivated by holding this person to account. And I do think that when you step back and look at who Brenda is and, you know, the things that she has said and done in her past, that's not out of step with what she has done, right? So just to give a little background, you know, in the past 25 years, Brenda Tracy has reported one other thing, which was her gang rape in 1998. She reported that to the police. The evidence in that case was shocking, like overwhelming. I'd actually recommend everybody read about it in The Oregonian, which did a really good story about it in 2014. You know, she was brutally, violently raped, and the four men, two of whom were, college or Oregon State University football players, They contradicted each other's accounts. They admitted to aspects of it. It's really quite shocking how much evidence there was, according to the police report that she filed. Nothing came of it. I mean, the charges were dropped. There's a whole other story that you can read on that. But Brenda Tracy, you know, she did experience a lot of victim blaming from this. This is a big part of her story. It's, you know, she said that this incident sort of, it was so traumatic for her that she, you know, contemplated suicide for many years of her life. So she does know what it's like to come forward and to be the person who everybody is speculating about and scrutinizing. And so, you know, then you fast forward a little bit to her, when her activism career began in 2014. She has spent the next 9 years, you know, advocating for different ways to make things safer for those who come forward, to advocate for tougher policies at the NCAA level around serious misconduct, and to really push coaches directly to, you know, hold other men to account and hold their players to account and try and fix that culture. You know, she has even, you know, developed her own serious misconduct policy that is like the most, you know, comprehensive serious misconduct policy in the country. And it's designed around, you know, accountability. And, you know, so, I mean, it's even in the pledge that like Michigan State, like Mel Tucker himself signed after she visited his team that, you know, I'll hold each other to account, you know, we'll set the expectation, which is the name of her nonprofit, that rape and sexual assault and interpersonal violence are never okay. And that men have to take an active role in stopping that. So, you know, now you have in 2022, she reports for the second time in 25 years. And, you know, over that time, there's been a single person who has, you know, accused her of has basically said anything about her that isn't positive. I mean, you can read tons of news articles where Brenda has visited coach after coach who has said how eye-opening, you know, her talk was and how inspiring she is and how an amazing person she is. And there are all these schools that have made her an honorary captain. And there's only one person who is, you know, accused her of being a fraud that we know of, and that's Mel Tucker. And, you know, so as for her motivation, I think what she has said that this was about holding a person to account, that, you know, she didn't feel like she would be able to live with herself if she stayed quiet about it. I do think that is in line with kind of what she has stood for over the last 9 years.
Yeah. I mean, what you just laid out is a great counter to this line that she's a professional victim. I mean, that's been a popular line out there in the ether of, oh, this person's always, you know, crying this or cry. What you said basically blows that up. I mean, that's not, if this is your MO, you don't go 25 years without leaning into your MO at least once. So I think that speaks to her credibility, at least in that regard. There's not some long string of these types of situations. Were you made aware, I mean, have you seen any documentation, the nature of these two settlement offers from Mel Tucker's side and his attorney?
I can't speak on that publicly. I don't have enough to report on that publicly right now.
Fair enough. I mean, for the public's sake, that's, Mel Tucker could say, this is just a nuisance, I'll give her $50,000. Or he could be offering her $10 million. And that doesn't definitively mean anything either way. But, you know, there's a difference between a nuisance payment and I have some real liability here. I'm worried where this is going. Not knowing, you know, where that was, I can't comment on that. But that would be an interesting piece. Again, it doesn't definitively prove anything. But if there's some massive settlement offer, or, you know, the second one jumped way up from the first, that's more compelling than, if they offered her 50 grand, the settlement offer doesn't really mean much. That could be more easily dismissed as a nuisance situation. From the Mel Tucker side and how he's handled this, I think his statements have been bizarre. Tom Mars, a famous attorney in the country, represents Jim Harbaugh, who's weirdly entwined in the story in his own way. He came out and said that the way he's handled this is he's burning bridges. This is the absolute opposite way of handling it. Have you found it peculiar that he's come out so aggressively and invoking Paula Levine's name, which you have debunked that she had any involvement? Have you been surprised by his reaction?
A little bit, I guess, just in the sense that, you know, this was like a topic that Brenda Tracy discusses at her speeches, is like, you know, victim blaming and how to treat people with respect and, you know, to allow I guess, people the space to come forward and to do that, you know, with grace. And he kind of has blown all that up. And, you know, I guess if you believe that he's falsely accused, maybe that makes sense that he would act that way. But, you know, I think to me, what stands out about what Mel Tucker has said publicly is, you know, just some of the statements that he's made just have some factual deficiencies. You know, he's claimed certain things about the Title IX process, like, you know, why it's unfair to him, like, oh, you know, we don't have the opportunity to put anyone under oath. Well, that doesn't happen in Title IX cases, right? We never had the opportunity to present evidence, or we're not going to have that opportunity. They had months and months to do that. And then plus there are things that he has said that directly contradict what he told the investigator that are central aspects of the story. You know, one example is that in his public statement, you know, that he issued a couple of weeks ago, he came out and said, oh, you know, I had never canceled Brenda Tracy's July 2022 visit. I had only postponed it to January 2023. Well, maybe, you know, that makes sense to most people, but for those who have access to the investigation report, he said pretty much the opposite thing to the investigator. He said, yes, absolutely, I had a role in canceling it. And no, there were no discussions about bringing her back in January 2023. And so that's the part of it that seems to me like a little sloppy. Like, at least you would make sure that your story is straight when you have time to issue a written statement. And, you know, he really has gone, you know, scorched earth on Michigan State. I don't know how surprising that is. But yeah, you know, some of what he has said has been a little bit, you know, perplexing.
I mean, he's had a couple of statements out throughout the course of this. His first one, the mention of Jim Harbaugh and saying he was unaware of Brenda Tracy's past comments on Coach Harbaugh. I'm still not sure I understand what the hell he's talking about. What was that? Like, why did he say that? What is that in reference to? Do you know what that's about?
I do. You know, it's actually about a story that I wrote earlier this year about a sexual assault case at the University of Michigan. There was a young woman who was, you know, allegedly sexually assaulted by three football players. And, you know, she died afterward after struggling with depression and, drug use. And I wrote about that story. And, afterward, you know, Brenda tweeted something, about how, like Jim Harbaugh had, you know, promised to bring her back to campus, but then, you know, had not done so, and she hadn't heard from him, and she wondered why, you know, if this case had anything to do with why she wasn't invited back, when she believed that, you know, it was sort of an open invitation for her to come back. This was like when these comments were made is, you know, around the time, well, it was during this case. And so I guess Brenda or Mel Tucker was sort of monitoring, you know, her social media and said, oh, you know, this is evidence that, you know, she will, you know, turn on a coach, you know, who had once been good to her if he doesn't invite her back to campus. That was kind of what his allegation was about that. It's a little bit hard. It's a little bit tangled, a little tangled web.
There's a lot of like kind of throwing shit at the wall, like the Paul Levine thing. It's like, what are you even talking about? I don't know if it's an intentional attempt to confuse or what he's doing. It's a very peculiar strategy, even from his attorneys. It's one thing for the person in question to be all over the map, but even the attorneys, the way these statements have been written, it's very odd. I'm not really sure what they're going for. It's a very bad strategy long term in terms of employment and a redemption story, whatever type of redemptive arc there may be down the line. I don't know what they're doing. The big thing today, I think, and will be the big thing until we get to the hearing, is this fixation on the leak. And the state news, the Michigan State local student newspaper broke it today. I'm sure you saw it because you're on the ball, that the initial drafted statement from Brenda Tracy indicated that the leak, the source of the leak of her name to the media, was from someone either on or associated with the MSU Board of Trustees. What do you know about the leak, the source of it? What happened there?
Yeah, I don't. You know, this isn't going to be a very satisfying answer. I don't know, you know, who leaked it, if someone leaked it, if it was done, you know, with malicious intent, or if it was more, you know, indiscretion, like word just got out. I don't know, you know, if somebody just put two and two together. You know, one thing I've sort of thought about is Michigan State has sort of come out and clarified who knew what when, and they've said that a bunch of people knew, you know, that the complainant in the complaint against Mel Tucker was a vendor for the university, a third party vendor. And I just wondered, like, how many people are there? You know, what is the universe of how many vendors have he hired, especially during, you know, the pandemic? And I don't know the answer to that. But I just think it's possible that maybe somebody figured it out, right? And maybe it wasn't a leak. I really don't know. And I do think we're going to, you know, learn more about that. From my reporting, all I know is that there were people, you know, discussing the allegations against Mel Tucker in the Lansing community. They had reached out to MSU about it. And that it got to the point where somebody had actually mentioned Brenda's name in connection with those rumors. And that was what sort of led Brenda to decide, all right, it's, you know, it's only a matter of time before this whole thing gets out. So, you know, let's just move forward and go public now.
I mean, for Brenda to have had that statement drafted where she's implicating the MSU Board of Trustees, she has to have had that in her head from somewhere. I don't think she made that up. What is her explanation? Have you talked to her about that? I mean, where did she get that component of it? Because the Board of Trustees is not the entire admin. That is one body within the whole school. Where did she come up with the Board of Trustees?
Yeah, you know, I don't have anything I could say on the record about that, but I will say, I believe the statement came from Brenda's attorney. It referenced Brenda in the third person, and it referenced the attorney in the first person. So I think she would probably be the person to ask about that.
I mean, she does have power of attorney. She is speaking for her client. So it's really, it's considered one and the same. It's if the attorney is saying it on her behalf, it's the same thing as her saying it. Yeah, I mean, that's fair. I understand. It's just it's not even that it's suspicious. I mean, there's nothing necessarily nefarious about the question, or it's just more of a curiosity, because there's this obsession and fixation, and understandably so, with this leak and how problematic it is. And it's a big thing in Title IX. You're a Title IX investigative reporter. This is, you know, a big part of your beat. So I get the curiosity. It's just, it's interesting that she seems, or, you know, through her attorney, seems so certain it's the Board of Trustees. I have no idea who it is, but I wonder how much she knows. When was the last time you talked to Brenda? Are you like in regular contact, or have it been kind of cut off recently? What's your kind of day to day with her?
Yeah, I check in with her fairly regularly. You know, I there are lots of rumors going around about who leaked something. I've heard many of them. And, you know, I've heard rumors that are associated with the Board of Trustees. They came out and said it. I'm not ready to come out and say it, basically.
Fair enough. So what is Brenda's view going into this hearing? Is she ready for war? Does she expect Mel Tucker to not show up as she initially indicated? Like, what's her mindset going into this hearing upcoming?
Yeah, I think she's, you know, fully expecting to be questioned by Mel Tucker's attorney, you know, whether or not he shows up. You know, he's not required to show up and answer questions. He can essentially take the fifth, and it's not supposed to, you know, hurt him. That can't be used against him. However, you know, if the hearing officer had some question that only he could clarify, he would lose the ability to clarify that information. So, you know, and the other thing is, there's now this lawsuit that Mel Tucker has threatened, right? And so this hearing is almost like a deposition, right? It's going to come out eventually. There's going to be a transcript, and, you know, there's going to be a report on this, and there may be even audio or video released from the hearing. So what he says could be used against him in court later. And typically attorneys advise their clients to not say anything when they're on the defensive. You know, so will he answer questions? I really don't know. But I do think, you know, Brenda is prepared to be asked all the tough questions, and you know, for his attorney to come after her pretty hard. And, you know, and we'll see how it goes from there. But I know she's going to be there, and the hearing is expected to proceed. So it's only a question of whether he shows up.
So certainly with a civil trial, this could all be subjected to evidence in a subsequent hypothetical civil situation. Is this hearing public? Is it a public record? Is that something I can watch after the fact live? What's the process there for the public to access this, if at all?
Yeah. So, you know, it varies from state to state. It really just depends on what the public records laws are in that state. But from my understanding, this will be all made public. You know, Mel Tucker is a public employee. There are fairly liberal public records laws in Michigan. And this is a case that has tremendous amount of public interest. So the argument to keep these documents, you know, secret is pretty thin. I think the university, my understanding is they've already acknowledged that this is going to be made public in response to public records requests. There may be some redactions made to it. They may not allow every single word to go public. There may be reasons, valid reasons for them to remove some personal information or maybe something that is like completely unsubstantiated. But generally, people will get to see everything. There are recordings of these hearings. There are transcripts made. There is the hearing report that will be issued afterward. People will be able to get pretty much the entire case file that I have right now. And you know, and potentially even more than that. So yes, there will be a time. It might not be until the case is completely done. You know, there is confidentiality while the case is ongoing. And, you know, given that there are time for appeals and whatnot after this, we might not be able to see things for another month or so, but you know, it will all come out eventually.
So we'll finish here. What is your, and if you're handicapping this thing, you cover this stuff, you know this stuff, you seem to think Brenda Tracy prevailing here is a pretty strong likelihood. Is that fair to say? Do you see this going in her favor?
You know, I could see it going one of two ways. Honestly, I think I could see that. You know, the investigator would say, you know, these false statements, it's very hard to trust Mel Tucker here. You know, he has said things that just don't add up, that have been debunked. And so it's very difficult to take him at his word, you know, when he says these things that aren't backed up by, you know, any, you know, written evidence or recordings or anything. I could also see them just kind of, you know, tossing their hands in the air and say, look, you know, we see that there's just not enough evidence here for us to rule that he violated policies one way or another. You know, I could see it going in that direction. I think it really depends on, you know, which hearing officer you get and how they tend to view these sorts of situations. But you could expect that whatever decision this hearing officer makes, she knows she's going to have to really defend it. It's going to be subject to everyone, you know, reading and scrutinizing it. And it is going to, you know, play a role in whatever litigation, you know, comes at this. So she knows she's got to cross every T and dot every I. So I do think, you know, it'll be a pretty thorough analysis of the facts.
Yeah, it certainly could swing that settlement or lawsuit down the line in either direction. I know it's not a consideration, the Title IX process. They're supposed to look at it in a vacuum, and I'm sure they will, and I'm sure it'll be fair. But there's a lot at stake here beyond even just, you know, what's right, even from a financial standpoint. It's a fascinating, weird, twisted, wild story. I'm still getting my mind around it. I know a lot of other people are as well. And I have to say, I praise your reporting, really thorough. I think you did try to be fair. I saw one of my buddies sent me a text saying it's all one-sided. And I always argue it's going to be one-sided when one side is fully cooperating with the reporter and one side is no commenting you to death. And I know you've been completely stonewalled. So if you're only being told one side, you're doing the best you can. So I give you a lot of credit. I know that's a lot of work that you're undergoing to do this. And it's a big, weird story. And I can't say I'm looking forward to watching it, but I am curious to see where it all ends for sure.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. Yeah. You know, we weren't able to talk to Tucker before the story dropped. He hung up on me when I tried to call him. But we did have, you know, something that worked in our favor, which was that we had his entire statement, you know, to the investigator, his whole 3.5 hour interview, all the letters that he has sent in the meantime that really, you know, extensively outlined what his arguments are. So we did feel like we were at least able to capture in the story, you know, what his side was and present his arguments and let people decide for themselves what they think.
Yeah, and totally fair. From the Michigan State perspective, I said at 3 a.m. on a Spaces that had way too many people in it right after your report dropped that I could believe every word Mel Tucker says in your story and still land on the just cause termination from the Michigan State perspective. I don't really even need to believe Brenda Tracy to land there. Obviously, you know, the just cause termination is separate from the Title IX findings. There's people need to sort of separate those two. So I don't think there's anything wrong that happened to Mel Tucker here from the Michigan State perspective. We'll see about Title IX. I'd love to bother you again sometime as this story progresses. I really appreciate your time. I know you're in high demand, especially you're covering one of the biggest sports stories in the country right now. So Kenny, really appreciate your time tonight.
Thank you. I appreciate the time and space to be able to answer some of these questions in detail. I'd be happy to come back.
I'd love to have you. Kenny Jacoby, USA Today. Really on the ball. This guy's been all the amount of words, just the word count on this guy's reporting is insane, especially that initial one. That was it takes a big, crazy story to get people in the middle of the night to read it and then sit in a space. It's like they did on our show for, it was like a 3 hour thing. So it's obviously a brutal, unfortunate story, but fascinating to cover just as someone that's interested in this stuff. And we'll see what happens at that hearing. I'm thrilled that it's going to be either soon or eventually down the line public. I think that'll be somewhat revealing and we can make our own conclusions based on the evidence. So anyway, we'll wrap there. It's Off the Curve, Justin Spiro. Thanks again to Kenny Jacoby, Ben Augusta. Appreciate you guys. We'll see you next time. Thanks.